in my soup. Monkeys and rabbits loop the loop. Gosh, oh gee, but I have fun swallowing animals one by one in every bowl of...
If you don't know who that is, you clearly did not spend enough time with your grandparents. Hi guys, welcome to The Missing Ones. I'm Liberty Campbell, your host. Today we are going to talk about Shirley Temple, one of my favorite child stars. She took the world by storm during the Great Depression and brought hope to countless numbers of people. But it wasn't always sunshine and rainbows for the young and beautiful Shirley Temple. Today I want to tell you the whole story. Shirley Temple was born April 23rd, 1928, in Santa Monica, California. She got her start when she was just 3 years old. She made her debut starring in a string of low-budget movies with a company called Educational Pictures. They were eventually dubbed the Baby Burlesques, and I'll get into this a little bit more later, but you should know they were weird. At 3.5, she was enrolled in dance classes, and her father became her agent and financial advisor. After her time doing the Baby Burlesque films, she was led to a contract with the Fox Film Corporation. When Shirley was just 6 years old, she appeared in her very first Hollywood film, Carolina. With Fox, she made an additional 8 films, including the smash hit Little Miss Maker. She was an overnight sensation and a top earner for Fox. President Franklin D. Roosevelt was fond of Shirley and called her, quote, Little Miss Miracle, unquote, because she raised the public's morale during times of economic hardship. And at one point, he was quoted saying, quote, as long as our country has Shirley Temple, we will be all right, unquote. Shirley's song and dance routine in her movie Bright Eyes earned her a special Academy Award for Outstanding Personality in 1934, at only 6 years old. By 1940, Shirley had done 43 films. As Shirley got older, her popularity declined. She appeared in The Bluebird in 1940, but it did poorly in the box office, and by the 1960s, Shirley's career was over, and she began to pursue a career in public service. I bet you didn't know that. I didn't really know that until I started doing this research. In 1967, she unsuccessfully ran for U.S. Congress, but from 1969 to 1970, she served as U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. 4 years later, she would be appointed Ambassador of Ghana. In 1976, she became Chief of Protocol of the U.S. She would hold this title until 1977. In 1988, Shirley became the only person to date to achieve the rank of honorary U.S. Foreign Service Officer. In 1988, Shirley became the only person to date to achieve the rank of honorary U.S. Foreign Service Officer. In 1989, she became an ambassador for what used to be Czechoslovakia until 1992. In 1998, her lifetime accomplishments were celebrated at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. In 2005, she was awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Screen Actors Guild. At just 17 years old, Shirley married John Agar Jr. The marriage ended in 1949, and I'm going to get into that a little bit more later, but it was after the birth of their daughter, Linda Susan. A year later, she married Charles Black, and they remained married until his death in 2005. Everyone knows about how glamorous it had to have been to be a child star back then, but not everybody knows what really happened to Shirley during this time. In the 1980s, Shirley wrote an autobiography called Child Star, and I have not had a chance to read it, but it is definitely on my read list. I'm hoping my library has it, because on Amazon it's quite expensive. I'm going to start with the Baby Burlesques that she worked on. In 1932, she starred in one called War Babies, and you can see this on YouTube. I'll also have it linked in our blog, but it's weird. She plays a exotic dancer, I guess you could say. I guess I'm actually going to start with by telling you a little bit about what the Baby Burlesques are. So basically, they are spoofs of popular movies at the time, but they're with children, and like I said, they're really weird. They put children in very adult situations. Shirley plays an exotic dancer who dances for all of these men/boys. I mean, they're all boys they're all boys in the movie, but they gawk at her and they look at her and they watch her and talk to her, and it's really weird. But the weirdest thing that I thought, or the thing that I thought was weird, was that none of these boys are wearing clothes. They are all in ginormous cloth diapers secured with a giant safety pin. Like, it's weird. Some of them are wearing helmets and hats and gun belts, like they're soldiers, which is, I mean, that's the point. They're supposed to be soldiers going off to war. She's supposed to be the exotic dancer that steals their heart. And I mean, it's like, it's creepy. At one point in this film, she even trades kisses for lollipops. In fact, War Babies is the first time Shirley gets kissed on film. But in another one of the movies, she plays an escort, and at one point even tells a child who is playing a senator that she is expensive. It's just, they're all very strange. They've been dubbed baby burlesque films, and I'm sure that there's a lot more information on them. I just didn't really look into it because I was focusing on Shirley. But if you want more information about those, if you want an episode about those, I'm more than happy to go and look up more information about them. While doing research for this episode, I found a quote from Shirley that I thought was quite sad. Quote, "I stopped believing in Santa Claus when I was 6. Mother took me to see him in a department store and he asked for an autograph." Unquote. I personally think that that is, like, so sad. Because of her stardom, she didn't really get a real childhood. And in a Larry King interview in 1988, she talks about after filming and stuff like that, she would go home and change into pants and she would be a tomboy and run around with the neighborhood kids. But I don't feel like she really had the typical traditional childhood that most people in that day and age had. And at one point, her mother even took off a year of her age to make her more marketable. I mean, she was a toy for these people to use and play with and make money off of. When Shirley was 12, she signed with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, or MGM. They were known for running their child stars into the ground to profit off of them as much as possible. In her autobiography, she wrote that her first visit to MGM, her and her mother were separated. She met one of the studio's producers, Arthur Freed, and during that meeting, the creep exposed himself to the 12-year-old girl, saying, "I have something made just for you." Here is Shirley telling Larry King about the experience firsthand in an interview in 1988.
"But how about producers and directors and all the stories we've heard about, hey, kid, being famous at that?
One guy, when I left Fox, I went to MGM for one picture. Thank goodness, only one. And when I got there with my mother, we were separated. She went into the office of Louis B. Mayer, and I went into the office of Arthur Freed. And he was going to talk to me about a movie he wanted to put me in. I'm 12 years old, you know. And I thought he was a producer, but instead he was an exhibitor. And I'd never seen anyone naked before, except myself. So I had no clue about what was happening. And so it struck me so funny, I laughed at him. And I laughed uproariously. I had tears, you know. And he got infuriated. And he said, out, 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 go.
Did you tell your mother?
Well, I went down. I was very quiet. I went down and met her in the lobby of the administration building. She came up very quietly from Louis B. Mayer's office. And we walked hand in hand silently to the car, which was unusual. We got in the car driving home. I said, Mom, you won't believe what happened to me. And I told her what happened, and she got kind of quiet. And she said, well, you don't know what happened to me. And Louis B. Mayer wasn't as bad as Freed was to me. He came on to my mother. And so we both decided that we didn't like MGM much. It was, you know, it was better at Fox.
I have listened to that over and over, and it's still mind-boggling to me. I just can't believe that, like, I can't believe how calm and cool she is about this. Because I believe, I mean, there's no proof to it, but I believe that she was probably exposed to this type of thing so much and so often that it was just normal. It is what it is, you know? And that's really sad and that's really tragic, I think. The man that exposed himself, Arthur Freed, went on to produce famous movies like Annie Get Your Gun and Singin' in the Rain. This wasn't the only time that Shirley had to fight off producers. When she was 17, producer David O. Selznick tried to assault her. Anita Colby, the artistic director for Gone with the Wind, which Selznick produced, warned Shirley of his advances, warning her that if she found him in his stockings, he had something more sinister in mind. In a quote from her book, Child Star, she says, quote, "Coming around my side of the desk, he reached and took my hand in his. Glancing down, I saw the stocking feet. Pulling free, I turned for the door, but even more quickly, he reached back over the edge of his desk and flicked a switch. I had learned from Colby was a remote door locking device. I was trapped." Like the cartoon of Wolf and Piglet, once again, we circled in reverse directions around his furniture. Blessed with the agility of a young dancer and confronted by an amorous but overweight producer, I had little difficulty avoiding passionate clumsiness. Unquote. In Shirley's book, Child Star, she refers to a specific Hollywood producer as Wizard. He once told her, quote, "Sex is like a glass of water. You get thirsty, you drink. You want sex, you have it," unquote. Shirley firmly told him that sex might be in his contract, but it wasn't in hers. She even fought off producer George Jessel when he opened his trousers and with one hand grabbed her arm and the other groped her, trying to lift her shirt. She kneed him in the groin, and according to her, she felt no mercy. At one point, Shirley and the 20th Century Fox Corporation sued Graham Greene after he continually wrote revealing and often offensive sexual desires. They sued him for libel and they won. Shirley was not the only actress or actor during this time to be confronted with sexual assault. It was very popular in this era. It was kind of just part of the job. When Shirley turned 22, she asked her family about the money that had been set aside for her in a trust account deemed by the courts. Her contract stated that she was to get a $15,000 bonus for each film that she finished. In today's money, that would be around $29,000. It eventually became $35,000, which is equal to $68,000. At the peak of her career, she earned $10,000 a week. And in today's money, that's $187,000. This was during the Depression, when the country was at its poorest. Her mother got an additional $250 a week, and Shirley was gypped. She got a $13 credit to spend every month. And in today's money, that's only $250. The money was to be placed in a trust for her for when she became of age. But when Shirley came to look at the account, it was short by a lot. There was supposed to be something like $3.2 million in there, and there was only $44,000 left of what she had earned throughout her childhood. But she doesn't blame her father because she truly believes that he was overwhelmed managing this large amount of money. Though he was a banker before the Great Depression, he was overwhelmed by the vast amount of money, and she truly believes that it was the people helping him that led him astray, that they were the ones that messed up and not her dad. As a child actress, Shirley was accused of a lot of things, but the most bizarre was probably when a woman attempted to assassinate her. Shirley was accused of a lot of things as a child star, but the most bizarre was probably when a woman tried to assassinate her during a live recording of Silent Night. The woman's reasoning? Well, she thought that Shirley, the 10-year-old little girl, had stolen her daughter's soul, and that by killing Shirley, it would release her daughter's soul. Thank goodness she did not succeed. Just like anyone in the spotlight today or back then, Shirley was surrounded by awful and untrue rumors. Things like she was an adult dwarf because she had a stocky build. This one was so widespread that the Vatican even sent someone to investigate her. It was rumored that she had never lost any baby teeth, but in reality, she wore a dental flipper and caps to hide the gaps created by losing her teeth. One of the most popular rumors was that her beautiful blonde curls were a wig. Fans would yank her hair to test the rumor. And sometimes she wished that she did wear a wig, because the nightly process for those famous curls was grueling. I mentioned earlier that Shirley was married at age 17. She married John Agar, a low-budget actor, and according to her autobiography, things went from bad to worse after the two got married. He was a violent alcoholic who cheated and was arrested multiple times for driving under the influence of alcohol. They divorced in 1949 after the birth of their daughter. Shirley Temple did not seem to have any hardships or any hate towards Hollywood or the people who exploited her and hurt her as a child. I grew up watching Shirley Temple with my grandma, and I'm very fond of her. Watching those movies as a child, I longed to be Shirley Temple. I'm pretty sure there's more than one picture of me with like really tight ringlet curls, just like Shirley. She was a beautiful person and deserves to be praised for all of the work she did as a US ambassador. Unfortunately, she is known for her acting career, which is fine because it was good, it was a good thing, and it was something that people really needed in the height of the Depression. But if you take one thing away from this, it's that she really was a beautiful person. Shirley Temple Black passed away February 10th of 2014, after a long life filled with her fair share of hardships, laughter, joy, and public service. She wasn't bitter about Hollywood, and she was grateful for the opportunity to bring so much happiness to a country that needed it so desperately. Thank you guys for listening this week. If you would like more information, you can find it on my blog, themissingonespodcast.wordpress.com. There you will also find my source links and photos from today's episode. You can connect with me over on Instagram at Liberty Lorray. I'd love to see you there. Have a wonderful week.